You're listening to the MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update Podcast.
Recently, we've seen quite an increase in the number of non-banking financial services providers that have come in to render financial services in the South African landscape. Everything from payment services providers to alternative financial institutions and crypto exchanges, we've seen an increase in the interest in facilitating some of these transactions on behalf of South Africans, hopefully aimed at providing greater financial inclusion. To this end, the South African Reserve Bank has re-looked its payments regulations and policies and made some adjustments to hopefully better clarify roles and responsibilities where it relates to the services offered. Joined on the line by the head of the National Payment System at the South African Reserve Bank, Arif Ishmael, to take a look at this and see what to make of it. Arif, lovely to have you on the show. Thanks so much for taking the time. Certainly, first of all, I think you have a job that not many people envy, the task of ensuring that South Africa's entire payment system, along with your team, continues to function in a digital world. I don't think anyone envies that. But let's start the conversation taking a look at what the legislation or the policies and provisions looked like beforehand and why the need to make these changes.
Thanks very much, Jimmy. I want to pick up on your first point. I don't think it's envious at all or anything of the sort. I think it's one of the most privileged jobs. I keep saying that digital payments is not, it's not a privilege, it's a right. And we must bring digital payments for all in South Africa. It can't just be for, you know, people like me, you know, in the higher LSMs or whatever it is. It should be for all. But what do the legislative changes bring? I'll just pick two activities that I think are going to be quite key. There's seven in total that we bring in clarity to, Jimmy, but the two that I think is going to be intriguing for consumers is, one is you're going to have e-money providers, and this could be the likes of, let's say, a retailer or an MNO like Vodacom or MTN, and they will be able to provide e-money without the need to partner directly with the bank. And the question you might ask is, so what? You know, some of them have been providing e-money services for quite a while. What's the difference? And the difference, I think, is in the business model. So without the need to partner with the bank, we're hoping that the costs can come down and that the benefits can accrue to the consumer. More than that, we're also hoping, similar to the likes of Alipay and WeChat Pay in China, as an example, that we could see the development of super apps. So you can book a dentist appointment, you can book an appointment for your dog. We're hoping that, you know, all of these innovations come. I'll finish quickly by saying the second activity is also quite key. It's what we call payment initiation service providers. So these are the likes of Google Pay or WhatsApp Pay, etc., like we see in India. They don't have to hold your store of value or your money, but they can trigger transactions for you. I hope that makes sense, Jimmy. Thanks.
Arif, let's just clarify for the benefit of our listeners. I've had moments where I've gone down several rabbit holes around legislation. Let's just clarify the structure of banks and payment services providers where it relates to custody of funds and holding of deposits, because I think that's a good point that allows us to then distinguish which entities are responsible for which transactions in a transaction. So let's say I need to fund something. Take us through the process of perhaps using a payment service provider and how they interact with the banks.
Yeah, of course, of course. So let's make it easy, Jimmy. I would say that usually customers are used to providing their money to a bank. Mm. You put it in a savings account, you put it in a check account, but the benefit of that is that you can trigger transactions from it, right? Now, with these new payment service providers, like an e-money provider, you could get an e-wallet, right? And that entity will be allowed through the new framework to take money from the public. But there's a particular caveat to it, a particular condition to it. It must be for payment purposes, right? Now, of course, one of the things would be that would be top of mind for you, Jimmy, is, oh, but when I'm putting my, you know, my money in a bank, there's a strong regulatory framework attached to it. Would this be similar for a non-bank? And the answer is yes, but it would be proportionate to that particular activity. So this activity is not lending and so on. This activity is a payments activity. And for this particular activity, we've put together a set of 21 recommendations or requirements that safeguards those particular funds. I could dive a bit deeper, Jimmy, if you want, on what those requirements are.
Arif, let's get into some of those requirements in a second. But before we get to that, can we perhaps just clarify how this would then shape out in the market? I mean, I'm referencing the likes of the FSCA, where we have something like an ODP license for banks and an ODP license for non-banks. Is this the kind of carve-out we're looking at, where we're saying there are certain non-banking institutions that function slightly differently, that therefore don't need to be considered banks, but will still be regulated as financial services providers?
Yes, absolutely. And the SARB, in particular, this department that I run, called the National Payment System Department, would be issuing out these particular authorizations or licenses, for an e-money provider. But the bar is quite high, right? So this is not a free ticket into the game. This is about making sure that the funds that are provided by the public are safe, safeguarded, and sound. What that would mean, and I'm just going to use two examples, what that would mean is, the funds that you take in as a non-bank or a fintech firm for, let's say, an e-wallet must be ring-fenced in a bank account, in a trust account that cannot be commingled with, you know, the running of your business, as an example. The second requirement that we would have is that as you take funds in, which we would just call liabilities for now, we will make sure that you have capital requirements that back up that particular set of funds. Now, it would not be as intense as a banking kind of entity, because of course, as I said, it's just for payment purposes, right? But there would certainly be capital requirements, both initial capital requirements as well as ongoing capital requirements as those liabilities increase, Jimmy.
Arif, how would this differ from what we existingly have? I know at the moment some of our payment services providers are governed and regulated by the Authorized Dealers with Limited Authority license, the ADLA license within the SARB. Is this basically just taking the ADLA license framework and creating a more specialized version of that, so that you can kind of carve out very specific requirements? Is it going to be very similar to that?
So I would say, Jimmy, it's different, because the ADLA license focuses on cross-border transactions and in particular remittances, right, where non-banks play in. But what's similar then is that as you have prudential requirements, capital requirements, fit and proper requirements, governance requirements, risk management requirements, we would use similar tools in order to safeguard the e-wallets.
This could be quite a revolutionary for the electronic payment setup. I want to look back at something that you touched on a little earlier, Arif, the birth of super apps and the regulations of those. I'm thinking about something like WhatsApp, where people have been able to kind of engage with a service provider, make a payment into what would effectively be a WhatsApp type wallet housed within that app. If we're going this route from that perspective, how do we kind of view that at this stage? I understand it's very fluid and can change at any time, looking at the financial services being rendered. The SARB will in part regulate this. Are we going to look to perhaps introduce secondary regulation through something like the FSCA that also regulates an extension of what the South African Reserve Bank would look to oversee? Or are we doing a single license at a South African Reserve Bank level that would then obviously cover all the others? Banks already have dual licenses anyway, and so it wouldn't be a new thing to say, if you're regulated by the SARB under this, you then have to have an FSP license to go with it.
Right. I mean, some of that would come out as, you know, the Conduct for Financial Institutions bill transforms into an act from the FSCA's perspective, right? What's important to differentiate is maybe a few things. So we work extremely closely with the FSCA. You know, as we put the authorization framework together, there's obviously dialogues that go on between ourselves and the FSCA. The FSCA would primarily and importantly be looking at, let's call it, customer-related matters or conduct-related matters. What we would be looking at is all the prudential type of matters related to the security and safety and protection of the store of value, including quite fundamentally, the importance of managing any risks that may enter into the payment system. So the National Payment System Department, you know, through the SARB, would look at those particular risks related to payment systems, including, as you mentioned, right, making sure that, you know, that these wallets are safe, making sure that as it interacts with the national payment system, you know, that there are no undue risks that are brought, et cetera. But we would work extremely closely with the FISCA on whether there would be a dual license. I mean, that's something that we've got to tease out as the, you know, as the coffee bill, you know, becomes an act. But for now, you know, it's this authorization that would matter the most to non-banks. Yep.
And for now, the most important thing to take away from this conversation is that our South African Central Bank is focused on ensuring the securest payment systems in the country and possibly even on the African continent, and ensuring that we still afford accessibility to the South African public. I think it's a fantastic initiative. I, for one, am excited to see how this licensing shapes up. I think it's going to be transformative for financial services in South Africa. But for now, we're going to have to leave this conversation on that note. The head of payment, the head of the national payment system at the South African Reserve Bank, Arif Ismail, joining us to take a look at some interesting adjustments they've made to regulation to allow for more players to enter the space.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb SAFM Market Update podcast, uploaded weekdays at 7 p.m. For more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the app and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.